A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, guys and girls. The program you are about to hear will be both fun and educational, but it is not a substitute for medical advice. Although we are doctors, we are not your doctors.
Hello, and welcome to Travel Medicine. As always, I'm your friendly neighborhood internal medicine doc, Dr. J.
Hey, guys. This is Dr. Santosh, your pediatric infectious disease doc and researcher.
Happy Spooktober. Happy return of Travel Medicine to the airwaves for our 9th season. I know it's the second episode, but maybe somebody missed one or they're playing catch up. I just want you to feel welcome whenever you come back, whether it's right away or you find us a few weeks later. Listen, we appreciate you.
Please, please feel welcome, because this is turning into desperation at this point. And
we want you sticking around, because you're going to learn, life expectancy is dropping, and we really need to hold on to all our audience members. There's only so much market share out there, Santosh. So, surviving listening audience, welcome to Spooktober. It is an alternate week, which means a couple things. It's October. Yes. Which means this is going to still be at least a little spooky themed, as long as I can keep that going. It also means, as an alternate
week, into Christmas, yes.
It also means that as our first alternate week of the season, it's time for everybody's favorite segment, Kermit Arms Up in the Air, another Journal Club. Yay!
Yay! Oh, it never gets old. 9 seasons of Kermit Arms.
But this week, the motif is body horror, meaning things that make you go, ah!
Now, for those of you who don't know your horror genres, body horror are the classically movies, the type of movies that you see that really overrepresent just gross surgery, taking one body part off and transplanting it to another part of your body, and then a lot of gore coming out and mutations that sprouting extra limbs and faces melting off, like lots of stuff where the body is manipulated to make you go either ah or something like that.
So we're probably not going to get quite that graphic. It's the Journal Club, not the Halloween episode, but these involve some sort of alterations to the body that may cause a little bit of unease. But as this is a spooky episode, let's start with life expectancy in the U.S. is dropping for the second year in a row.
Yeah.
And according to the article that first brought this to my attention, it is in fact the worst decline in a century. Now, we're only about 20 years into this century, so...
yeah, but I do hope that all of our wonderful folks do come and check out our links and the show notes and stuff, especially to fact check us, you know, follow us on Facebook and Instagram and fact check us. But I think the big thing that really freaks you out when you're looking at this is to actually see the first graph that's published on here from the NCHS. It is not pretty.
So the National Center for Health Statistics has stated that based on available evidence, Americans who were born in the year 2021 can expect to live on average only 76 years.
Yeah.
Now, in 2019, the life expectancy for those born that year was 78.8 years. And before that, it was around, I think the highest we've been was about 80.5 years.
Yeah, we had come to, you know, kind of a nice peak. There's these small little ups and downs. And then we're going to talk about discrepancies in terms of gender, or at least biological sex, and your kind of ethnic origin as well. But yeah, we had reached this beautiful peak when everyone was not fully taking care of themselves, but you know, there was a good social safety net. There was lots of awareness about exercise and diet. And in general, the big, huge health killers were kind of coming under control. And then, yeah, these last 2 years, we fell off a goddamn cliff. 2 years doesn't sound like a lot. But
what do you suppose could have happened between 2019 and now?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if we really dive into this graph, what do I learn from it? I'm looking at three lines. I see that consistently female life expectancy is higher than male by about 4 to 5 years.
Yeah,
that the total life expectancy for humans in general is higher than that for any individual male member of the species.
Yes, yes.
by about 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. And that the 2.7 life years of decline that were lost between 2019 and 21 is the biggest drop in life expectancy since the 1920s. So there's the century that they're talking about. The last time we had a drop anywhere close to that was about a 2.5 year drop around, let's see, 1918 to 1920.
What?
Weird.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's all
Santosh.
Lining up.
It's so weird that at two ends of a century, both around the 20s, there'd be a 2 year drop in life expectancy over two. What could cause that?
All right. Well, you know, we are a science-based medicine type of podcast, right, Josh? We focus in on evidence and all these kind of things. That being said, I believe Sagittarius was falling and Mercury was in retrograde. Oh, shit. Sorry. Wrong notes. Sorry.
I've never been so angry in my life.
Sorry, that was for my, it's for something else that I'm working on. Anyway.
if you're writing an article for Goop, I'm going to punch you right through the radio.
Oh, it would be so awful if that was the way I told you that I was totally Dr. Ozing it from now on. I would feel so heartbroken. That's how you found out, was that I mixed up my show notes with my Goop podcast. No, absolutely not. That was completely farcical. We all heard of the Spanish flu, right? Although it had nothing to do with Spain, right? There was a pandemic, and now we are suffering through a terrible global pandemic. Both of them were respiratory illnesses. Both of them moved viciously fast. And both of them there was the biggest factor in there. There was economic upheaval, right? And so you had poverty compounding on top of that, and you had some degree of resistance to the established medical wisdom, whatever that was, governmental or else. And in our case, Josh, the latest one, even though those vaccines saved millions and millions of lives, there were millions more that were lost because they weren't vaccinated in time or they refused to be vaccinated. It really hurt us. I think that was one of the number one
The thing
one
that
causes.
Was affected was the long-term effects of those who survived the disease. If you died from the disease, that takes you out of the life expectancy equation right there. We no longer expect you to live. But if you survived, when you're looking at things like long-term lung disease or now long COVID, that's where you're really seeing the drop-off in life expectancy. More people struggle with diabetes, obesity, heart disease, all of which are major risk factors of dying from COVID, not just in the immediate infection period, but also following. And not every ethnic group has been affected equally by this. That 2.5-year drop is an average. Native Americans, Alaskan Natives, have had a drop of up to 6.5 years of life lost since early 2020. So their average life expectancy is only 65, which was, you know, what you expected to live as an American in 1944.
Yeah, storming Normandy. That ranks among third world countries. It is god awful.
Whereas African Americans are living to only about 70 in 2021. And the longest live of our country's ethnic groups is generally Asian, and even they dropped down to only about 83 years. So everyone has taken a hit, but the native populations have by far done the most. And I think that comes into what you're talking about with access to resources as well as genetic conditions.
Yeah. And when we talk about this disproportionate hit, when we talk about Black people being hit in terms of life expectancy, almost losing an average of 5 years, the AIAN population, so Alaskan, Inuit, and Native American or American Natives, and we're talking about 71.8 years, which was their average life expectancy in 2019, down to 65, so a 6-year drop versus maybe a 2-year drop elsewhere. And by the way, the Latin American population as well, suffering a really bad drop. This kind of disproportionate thing, it absolutely has to do with socioeconomic strata and, you know, really bad drop off in access to care. But unfortunately, Josh, that also means that those folks were also hit hard by kind of, you know, negative messaging, whatever it was on social media and that kind of a thing, where we in healthcare had to campaign harder for those groups to go get their vaccines because there was more of a pushback. In some cases, because of very well-deserved distrust of the government and anything kind of official because of our past.
Because of the horrible things we had done to their bodies.
Yes, yeah.
That's what we call a callback. Mm-hmm. In the showbiz world. So
yeah.
Now let's get into some more of the spookier things about it. So if you were born before 2021, your average life expectancy still matches up with what it was for that year, minus whatever's been happening with your health since then. But in general, we're seeing a decline, which is concerning. So hopefully that'll turn around soon. Now, Santosh, We're in full on Spooktober season, and you're starting to see those decorations go up around town.
Oh yeah!
What are some of the traditional Halloween decorations that you tend to see? Like the most common family friendly classic ones.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you've got to set up your pumpkins, right? And if you've got your carving skills down, you're going to turn that into an awesome jack-o'-lantern. We used to put candles in there, but nowadays we have beautiful LED lights. And you can put up let's see, witches and black cats, usually in silhouette on there. We have folks who decorate their lawn with false graves. And then if you really want to get into it, you have zombie arms sticking out of the dirt in front of
the
grave.
Look, as if the, yeah. I know you've been to my house. I'm asking you what's the easy, cheapest Halloween decoration to put up that you don't even have to go out and buy? It'll just exist if you, you know, take it easy for a few days.
Oh, like if you just neglect not to clean around the house and that kind of a thing and let the spiders do their job.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, to make that abandoned, creepy kind of look is, of course, the cobwebs.
Now, what if I were to tell you that the next time you run out of bandages, could just reach for the cobwebs in your basement as an alternative, right? People love touching cobwebs. Think about how much we all flail around searching for them.
And I would also say that Peter Parker is a selfish little bastard because he made webbing and he could have been saving lives a whole nother way, but he just wants to swing around town, you know, kicking rhinos in the behind and whatnot. You're selfish, right? Parker.
So cobwebs have long been thought to have antiseptic and antifungal properties. They were actually used in ancient Greece and Rome by physicians to make bandages. Now, we've looked in the past into using bugs and bug products on wounds. And supposedly, cobwebs could speed healing, reduce bleeding. They're thought to be rich in vitamin K. I'm not entirely sure why a spider would need that, but I cannot speak to its veracity or its falseness.
Well, we do know in our own body, Josh, that vitamin K is used for clotting. And in order to construct like fibrin clots and that kind of a thing and make tough type of fibers, maybe it's the same kind of thing.
I guess. I just figure why have an anti-clotting in a spider web unless it makes it stickier. But either way.
Yeah, yeah. So it's tough fibrinous kind of a thing.
Did you know that spider webs have been a huge component of folklore-based medicine and Ayurvedic medicine in India?
Cool. I didn't know. I haven't studied a lot of Ayurveda and folk medicine, despite my background, but that's really...
So apparently, there's the idea that spider webs have all these antiseptic properties and can entirely replace bandages has long been a component of, and I'm emphasizing folklore rather than traditional medicine in India. This is an unsubstantiated practice. So one scientist actually set out to study it. And they took the topical application of, so in the folklore style, it's spider web and this powder, Azadirachta indica. So the scientists made a biomaterial synthesized from physiologically clotted fibrin, bovine collagen, the extract of this plant, and mixed it all up with spider web as the raw material. So engineered this bandage made of spider web.
Did they harvest the spider webs from spider goats?
Oh my gosh, I hope so. But probably not.
If you can throw in just a little show note in there about our awesome, awesome fiber goats. Spider goats, yeah.
But the work analyzed whether this engineered bandage from traditional materials actually possessed any wound healing mechanisms. And they used software online analysis that showed that when they analyzed it, that bioactive compounds were present. Whether or not they would actively promote wound healing is what the purpose of the study was.
All right.
And it turns out that the antibacterial activity was found to be dose dependent, meaning a large bandage might actually provide some antibacterial, but just flinging your hands through a cobweb, unlikely to provide any infection protecting.
Sure, sure. So we do have to harvest things appropriately. In probably even the folk medicine, it has to be prepared properly and then applied in some sort of a prescribed way to the wound. It can't just be, hey, grab me that thing out of the corner and swap and off you go.
But the really interesting thing about this study, separate from my ties to it with spiders and cobwebs, is mm-hmm. that this scientist, this study from Jafari et al., really focuses on the reuse of bio waste to turn into bio remediation. So it's looking Ooh. To recycle more unused parts of animals. So collagen, which promotes tissue growth and makes it easier to remove infected tissues, promotes angiogenesis, could be obtained from sources like chicken, beef, fish in various forms. And I'm sure if you walk down, you know, certain aisles at Whole Foods or fitness stores, you've seen collagen powder, particles, paste, gels, sponges.
Now, and that's nonsense, right? Because that's people actually trying to ingest the collagen. That's just going to be broken down in your stomach and turned into amino acids.
Yeah, save it for your astronomy article, Paltrow.
Exactly.
Now, listen, the reason that we don't tend to use bovine or beef and pork collagen is that they are more likely to be at risk for transferring, if present, spongiform encephalopathy, foot and mouth disease. There are ethical issues, certainly across regions and religions who uh-huh. may not want to use animal products. But the distinct properties of these animal products, such as biocompatibility, low mm-hmm. immune response, meaning it won't set your own system off against you, causing the least amount of allergy. And you can get it from the same things we get Jello and gelatin and things like that. Bovine mm-hmm. collagen was noted to be particularly effective in this spiderweb bandage for second and third degree burns, as well as diabetic ulcers.
Oh, that's so cool. And we do have a background using this kind of a thing therapeutically. For instance, chicken, hyaluronic acid, is used for people who have joint degeneration in their knees, and it can be injected kind of like a lot of synovial fluid into the joints. And just like you said, Josh, inert, it doesn't cause any inflammatory or immune reaction. And people can last for about 6 months where they've lost cartilage in their knees and you just have a substitute protein injected into that joint space, helping create a nice floating area so that your bone doesn't hit bone in your knee and you can go back to life for a while. So applying this to healing our Band-Aid is pretty intuitive. That's so cool.
So most of us, while we do have access to cobwebs, probably don't have a bunch of random pig and pork or pork and beef collagen lying around. But if you can get it, in theory, you could synthesize a very large bandage, maybe mummy style, to promote wound healing. Now, let's move on from the ancient and skin and cobwebs to a little bit more of a futuristic horrifying idea.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Santosh, are you tired of brushing your own teeth twice per day?
Boy, am I, Ron.
Well, science might have a solution for you. Tiny, shape-shifting microbots for your mouth! Because
ew,
if
Ron.
That... yes, home listeners, that's the focus of a new study from researchers at the University of Pennsylvania who created prototypes for nanobots, a confidence-inducing word that can change shape to form bristles for brushing, slide between your teeth to floss them, and we mention that they can also release antimicrobial substances to eliminate dangerous bacteria from your mouth.
Teeny tiny robots crawling around your mouth and doing your work for you. There's no way this could backfire for someone with a horrible, horrible Terminator phobia. I am adopting your robots are going to kill us for this, because replicants, like tiny replicating nanobots that can squeeze into tiny crevices like this
in your mouth.
In your mouth.
Like, This is like the Terminator being shrunk down, Ant-Man style, to attack your teeth, your luxury bones, the part of your skeleton that sticks out of your face.
Just crawling around. Just brush your teeth.
Yeah, right? How lazy do you have to be? I need a robot to brush my teeth for me. Just give up.
Oh,
give
God.
Up at that. So
if this is the reason why Skynet takes over like this, just this.
So the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved the use of iron oxide nanoparticles in the past for use in other biotech products, from contrast agents that get injected into MRI patients, as well as delivery systems for some drugs. So these nanobots or these nanoparticles have been on the market for other things, but we've never talked about just casually having them roam around our teeth and gums. So how does it work? Magnetic field-directed assembly of nano, this is just from the press release, so there's going to be a lot of language we may have to break down here.
Sure, yes.
Magnetic field-directed assembly of nanoparticles into surface topography-adaptive robotic superstructures, hereafter referred to as STARS.
STARS!
Well, that's charming.
Yeah, they did a good job. Way to go, engineers.
So, magnetic guidance of STARS for precision-guided biofilm removal, that's the cavity scraping or plaque scraping, and diagnostic sampling. They and here's where it starts getting terrifying again. These structures extend or retract at multi-length scales to operate on opposing surfaces, rapidly adjust their shape, length, and stiffness to apply high shear stress. STARS can enter angled grooves or extend to narrow crevices, scrub biofilm from the surface, and produce reagents on site. It can also capture any escaping bacterial, fungal, viral, and matrix components for multiplexed diagnostic analysis. Oh, and in case you were wondering, how did they test it? Ex vivo human teeth. This is the Terminator Tooth Fairy. Scientists have real human teeth that they were running these robots over, and they're like, boy, we can't wait to get these in your mouth.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they had to test it on some sort of a, you know, surface that is going to simulate what they're trying to clean off of, right? So they got donated fallen out teeth or teeth that were extracted, right? Then they painted a biofilm onto them. They assembled the teeth, and not like a whole row of teeth. Okay. This isn't like the engineers aren't in the back. Like,
I'm sorry. Were you there at the Tooth Fairy's factory?
No. I'm looking at their figures. They just assembled two teeth, just two of them, in a row, so you have a small mini surface.
Why are they so pointy?
Yeah, they're just incisors, that's why. And so they just put them side by side, so you actually have, you know, like a crevice in between the teeth, and then, you know, put them in. They painted a little biofilm on it so that it could pick it up, and then this is kind of the neat part, Josh. Do you remember, you know, when your mom or dad would give you toys to distract you and stuff? Because, Josh, leave me alone for a little bit. We, as 80s children, used to have this one where you had iron filings that were in the middle of something, and then you could take a magnet and actually spread them out and paint a picture, or even, you know, if you had an Etch-a-Sketch, which is made on the same principle, right? Iron filings, and then you turn the knobs in order to move the magnets underneath in order to pull up the iron filings in a row. So this
so you're
is
saying
this,
they could clean our teeth remotely? Sounds kind of sketchy if you ask me.
It is. So you fill the mouth with the nanoparticles, the magnetic nanoparticles.
Not selling this.
No. And then the magnetic field is applied from the outside. So you put your head in the magnetic field, and then there's an operator that tunes it and move the magnets.
Hold up. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Around, so those little nanoparticles, essentially like sand, iron sand, can scrape along the gums and the teeth. They can sweep away plaque and everything like that as they skid across your teeth. And then the final thing that you were talking about that it could collect, they can magnetically collect all of those nanoparticles out of your mouth. So imagine those stream of sand like just coming out of your mouth. Just coming out past your lips, and they can collect that into a little jar, and it'll carry with it all of your bacteria and all the nasty stuff. So you could potentially say, oh, you know, he has these streptococci and these fusobacteria and these porphyromonas and this kind of thing, and we can create a custom microbiome fighting and helping toothpaste just for you based on what we scraped out of your mouth with this little magnetic sand.
I mean, you could, or you could just look in my Amazon search history where I'm sure they've already collected all of that data about my microbiome anyway, based on my last like six purchases and film rentals.
Yeah, but it is creepy to think about, you know, hey, eat this sand, Josh, but don't swallow it. The magnetic field just moves it around, no. And you feel the sand moving over your gums and teeth.
Now, my general distrust of artificial intelligence has been well documented throughout the 9 years that we've been doing this show.
Yeah.
But this is not entirely different to the way they help to steer, like the use of magnets to induce movement in medical treatment is not new. In fact, for at least the last 5 or 6 years, we've had capsule endoscopies and small micro robots that can be encouraged to go around. And we've talked about them in previous journal clubs. This would also be an excellent way to obtain samples closer to the root of a tooth while without affecting the gums. Sterile sort of nanoparticles would not induce the same sort of auto-inflammatory immune response that you might see from a more organic bacterium or viral vector. So it is safer and less likely to cause new infections for dental procedures. It could be done with greater control. There's a lot of good things about it for humanity in general. I still don't like it.
No, to be very fair, Josh, this isn't AI, right? This isn't the robots controlling themselves or having to think. So far, you do have to have an operator. The machines themselves, the nanobots, or I should say nanoparticles that are inside of the mouth or over the teeth, they don't have any kind of robotic ability in and of themselves. Like there's no moving parts. There's no thinking to that thing. All of the movement is being done by the external magnetic field. And so far that has to be done by a human operator on this particular test. They didn't set up a computer to try to trace these kind of things. But yeah, they can actually, so just brushing right, they can do those nice circular movements and that kind of thing. And the flossing is they can go between and all that kind of a thing. But yeah, clinically, they totally can. Instead of having to rip open your gums to get to the root, you can just have these little tiny particles get in between and clean without causing all the peripheral damage. That'd be so cool.
you know, like ghosts or demonic possessions.
Beelzebub, enter the patient's mouth and retrieve the microbiome and polish their incisors while you're in there.
Ooh, it tickles my tongue.
And then, like, Beelzebub is, like, happy to do it because he gets his jollies off of that.
Right. So now that we've talked about bandaging your cuts with webs and skin products and robots taking over your teeth, we've gone from the future, we've gone to the past. Now I'm going to tell you something that isn't so much horror as something that we never really thought about.
Okay.
When you take a pill, Santosh, any reason, even a vitamin.
Okay.
What are you normally doing? Are you sitting up? Are you touching your toes? Are you backflipping, somersaulting, laying in bed?
Sure, sure. I do have to take medication in the morning. And what I'm usually doing is I'm standing up at my sink. So I'm, go to brush my teeth. I take my meds first in the morning. And I'm usually standing up straight.
You're doing it wrong.
Oh, no.
Standing up, maybe, because researchers at Johns Hopkins University recently performed one of the most complete simulations of the human stomach and how it absorbs drugs. And it turns out that your posture affects the pills you take.
Oh, neat. Oh, so not the, I'm guessing not the action, but how it gets down into your stomach and intestines and get absorbed and stuff.
Well, kind of the action, because when we, the next time we have Eleanor back, our space pharmacist, we can talk about the pharmacokinetics of drug absorption. And if it takes place over too long a time, insufficient amounts of a medication will be released and the drug will not have its intended effect. Similarly, if you're somebody with a digestive condition like a gastroparesis or muscle spasms, that also can affect how a drug is absorbed and therefore dispersed in the body. So yeah, posture can affect whether or not a pill works. And now here's where it gets fun. Over the course of this investigation, I'll bury the lead. They found leaning to your right at a roughly 45 degree angle, I'll wait. Okay. Go ahead and try it.
It's a 45 degrees to the rest of your body.
Yeah, 45 degrees to the right.
So that's not easy. You have to be pretty flexible.
That can cut in half the time it takes for a pill to dissolve compared to an upright posture. conversely, lying down on your left side is the worst possible posture. It's something to keep in mind for those of you who take pills right before going to bed. And that can lying on your left side can cause pills to take up to 5 times longer to dissolve than in an upright position.
5 times? Holy crap. So when you and I, Josh, think about like the half-life of a drug, or the absorption of a drug, sometimes we are talking about on the absorption of a drug, maybe 30, 40 minutes, an hour. Like you're talking about going from like an hour for the actions to kick in to like 5 hours. Like that's crazy.
Let's talk about, we'll make it simple. We'll put this in context. One of my favorite pharmacofacts to talk about with my med students is the famous pharmacodynamics and kinetics of everybody's favorite water pill, furosemide, also called Lasix, so named because it lasts 6 hours as an effective half-life.
Oh, that's pretty good. I like that. You've told us this before on the podcast. I love it.
So if you take a pill and you're lying on your side, so 6 hours to dissolve. Now, if a pill takes 6 hours to dissolve and it 5 times longer, that half-life is already pretty long, probably going to significantly affect your ability to absorb Lasix regardless of what position you're lying in. But for something like nitroglycerin or nitrate-based medications that are supposed to be absorbed very quickly.
Right. So this is why, Josh, we do have sublingual formulations and that kind of a thing. So we bypass this a little bit because we're able to deliver it straight into the bloodstream from these very prominent blood vessels that are just in your mouth, like under your tongue. If we're able to formulate it that way, most drugs we cannot formulate that way. And often you don't want it to. You want a slow, steady absorption after breakdown. But Josh, this could really affect care, because if you're saying that, you know, a person is not so bad in your hospital, for instance, because usually we're talking about an adult patient with Lasix, although we use it in kids, of course, but you say, okay, I need to give this Lasix, but I don't need to give it IV. I expect it to work in, you know, so far. And so you're expecting to see a reduction in their water weight, and you're tracking their ins and outs, but you might be fooled into saying that, like, oh my God, the furosemide isn't working. Your patient is in heart failure, and maybe you give it again or you give too much, but all you would have to do is wait because their posture is off. I mean, amongst other things.
So since the stomach has an asymmetrical J sort of shape, and I love that the organ that drives so many of my actions is shaped like my name.
yeah. Yep.
But the idea is, because of its anatomy, pills can end up in different sections due to gravity, depending on your posture. Are you slouching? Well, now maybe it's angled a little bit forward. Are you standing straight? Are you leaning to that 45-degree side like James Dean?
yeah. Now, without the cigarette.
The fact that your posture could maybe have an effect on your absorption has been known to doctors for some time, just like you said, like, oh, yeah, I guess that could make sense. But how significant the effect was really anybody's guess.
So, I love that they actually undertook a study to prove this. And there are beautiful illustrations on the website that you put in our show notes that actually illustrate the transit time through the intestines and how it goes and everything else like that, with axis markings and things like that. It is so cool.
So they tested, once they had built this stomach model, they tested the four most common postures, which are standing completely upright. So I already know that's a lie. It's really standing mostly upright with a slight slouch, because yeah, life has beaten you down. But that's a long sentence to put in a scientific journal.
Yeah.
So we're just going to say standing completely upright.
Yeah.
Leaning or lying at a 45-degree angle to the right. Leaning yeah. or lying at a 45-degree angle to the left. Or lying flat on your back.
Okay.
So
okay.
The researchers found, on average, it takes a pill 10 minutes to dissolve on the right side at that 45-degree angle, compared to 24 minutes to dissolve in an upright posture.
Okay.
Over 105 minutes when laying on the left side.
Wow. Okay.
And laying straight on the back was largely tied with standing upright at about 25 or 26 minutes.
Dude, if your pill's not working, stop your standing. Do the rock away. Lean right. Lean right. Ah, dude, this is so cool. So there's definitely, especially in the hospital, but also at home and everything else like that, this is advice that physicians and pharmacists, nurses, we should be giving our patients, because this could really, really mess with how these folks absorb their medications and whether or not it works, especially on time. And then we really care in medicine about the spacing of how the doses goes, because we're estimating for the half-life and the action of the drug. So if we're not accounting for this factor, which is pretty important, that's huge. And Josh, we do have patients who they're upright, they're ambulatory, they're able to lean right. and lean right if they need to. But there are definitely others that are supine. They're on their backs all the time because they can't get up, because they might be in various levels of consciousness, and we feed them their meds through something like a gastrostomy tube. And in those cases in the hospital, it may actually be really important for us to kind of posture them properly. Not all the time, because we have to move them around so they don't get bed sores, but especially during administration of medications. This is really important.
I think it expands the field of knowledge. And now when you take your pills in the morning, you know, I'm picturing you being like, ah, now I got to do a yoga pose just to make sure this works on time.
Yeah. You gotta go with the terror squad, man. You gotta go with Fat Joe. You gotta lean right. I don't care, man.
So the body horror of things that can be done by you. But mm-hmm. I do want to close out this last one, which I feel like fits with the body horror motif because it horrified this body. It's time. It's time for the mini segment. TikTok medicine. Don't.
Oh, God. Josh, do we have to?
Yeah. No, we really do, Santosh.
Oh.
Because okay. If it shows up in my TikTok feed and I let it go unaddressed.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah, you're right.
So let me ask, Santosh, have you heard of Sleepy Time Chicken?
No. Do I want to?
What if I told you NyQuil Chicken Challenge?
Dude, don't. No, come on. Like, is this like, okay, so you have a chicken sandwich and you chase it with NyQuil or something and it...
Oh, God, no, it's even worse.
Like, mess with you. Like, it makes the NyQuil work better. Or you get high off the chicken. I don't... What... Josh, no. What else could that possibly be?
It's so much worse than that. Every time I think humanity reached peak cringe with the Tide Pod Challenge. So, now... Okay. Now, I want to say, in terms of media responsibility, a lot of these hashtags have been scrubbed, so you can't go looking. Like, it's an effort to look for this, which is good. It should be. We don't want this being generally disseminated. But okay. If you've come across, people typically pour an entire bottle of NyQuil into the pan in which raw chicken is being cooked. This means the chicken... No, it gets worse. Let me finish. This means the chicken is being marinated in high doses of NyQuil. They then, on completion, they cook it till it takes on a slight blue tinge. Then they pour the remaining NyQuil back into the NyQuil bottle and put it away. Let's talk about the many, many poor life decisions involved in every stage of this.
No, but why? Why?
Why would you do the milk crate challenge? Why would you eat a Tide Pod? Why would you do anything on social media?
Well, okay. Tide Pod, okay, fine. They look a little bit like candy and you're just daring people because you already know that this is going to hurt you. Milk crate was the one where you drink a ton of milk.
Santosh,
right?
Let me stop you right here. We've had a former... leader of this country encourage people to drink bleach. I'm really not surprised at what teenagers with social media accounts may come up with for clout. Now,
really, really quick, to be very fair, okay, this isn't like a ton of teenagers and stuff that go out and do this.
Usually it better not be.
Yeah. The number of people who actually go and do this is usually overblown. Yeah.
But let's talk about why it's a bad idea, regardless of whether or not you wanted to do it. So average serving size of NyQuil is about 30 milliliters. Well, we're using culinary terms.
Yeah, sure.
So okay. The average serving size is 30 milliliters, or about 2 tablespoons, up to every 6 hours. A full bottle contains about 350 milliliters, so at least 10 servings worth. Okay. So there's the first problem. overdosing.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Okay. But that's problem number one of many. We'll continue.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Yes. Okay.
There are a bunch of different formulations of NyQuil. There's NyQuil D, or that's actually Robitussin. There's NyQuil daytime, NyQuil sleepy time, etc. Most of these contain some version of acetaminophen, which is Tylenol, dextromethorphan, which is a cough suppressant, and doxylamine or phenylephrine. Tylenol is a pain reliever and fever reducer, but when taken in extensive doses, it can cause complete liver failure to the point that your liver can't regenerate. So sleepy time chicken could straight up kill you. That's just from the Tylenol.
Whoa. Okay. Okay.
All right. Dextromethorphan is a cough suppressant, but one that acts on our cardiac system. So it can cause heart palpitations, agitation, and hallucinations when taken in excess. A few years back, I think Reddit had a Benadryl challenge looking to get the hallucinations that killed several people because you shouldn't overdose on antihistamines.
Oh, dear.
Also, dextromethorphan affects serotonin levels, which means you can get serotonin syndrome. That's to go along with your liver failure.
Yeah, yeah, from the acetaminophen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Doxylamine, that third component in NyQuil, is an antihistamine, like Benadryl, that can cause sleepiness, dizziness, and just like the dextromethorphan, a rapid heart rate and irregular heartbeats after high doses are swallowed.
Okay.
Phenylephrine, best known for medications like Sudafed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Constrict blood vessels, which means an overdose can result in high blood pressure, headaches, and even heart attacks when used in high enough doses and not administered in a proper way. So let's see. Now you're marinating chicken until it turns blue, not a color chicken should be. That's problem number six. Very minor in comparison, but blue chicken. Oh, and I also forgot, eating the NyQuil chicken isn't the only concern. Inhaling the vapors while heating
it. Oh, as it's cooking. Oh, my God. I never even thought of that.
So now you can destroy your lungs, your liver, your nervous system, your heart. Are there any others we're missing? Oh, wait. You're also concentrating because it's about what, like 50, 60% alcohol in their average NyQuil bottle?
Oh, sure. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm guessing that a good amount of that will burn off.
Yeah. Because of the cooking, but that's not the safety you think it is, because you know what happens when you're burning off the alcohol? You're doing what we call in the culinary world, reducing something, concentrating it, meaning removing the alcohol in which the medication is suspended, making it even more likely to cause heart palpitations, arrhythmias, serotonin syndrome, and an overload of your body's ability to process Tylenol, resulting in liver failure.
Oh, and by the way, all of these chemicals, these are small molecules, right, Josh? They're not like long strand proteins or something like that that breaks down if you cook them for long enough. They're not like bacterial toxins, which break down if you cook them properly. And by the way, not all of those. These are small, tiny molecules. And I don't know, but I'm guessing that quite a few of them are heat stable. And
well, even the ones that aren't, if anything, heat could accelerate and make it take effect faster or more powerfully. Remember, the pharmaceutical world is very carefully researched and engineered over years. They do not expect people to throw these around as ingredients in being the next top chef.
Is there any chance you could tell me why this was ever conceived of in the first place? Like, why?
No, and I'm not even going to try.
Okay. All right, fair.
The point being, if you are unaware, I'm going to assume, and the reason I feel reasonably safe talking about these is because I feel reasonably confident that most of our listeners are not going to hear this story and be inspired to run out and make sleepy time chicken. And that's because I feel like you listening at home are all very intelligent people. Mm-hmm. You have all, you know, chosen to dedicate yourself to learning. And most of you are probably not teenagers. And if you are, you are teenagers who come up with way better TikTok ideas.
Yeah. There are so many better things to do. Oh, my gosh.
That covers the last thing that should horrify you from this week. And that also, of course, closes out our journal club. For our spooky travel tip, I'm going to say find the nearest corn maze to you. It doesn't matter where. For me in Chicago, I will be going to the Richardson Adventure Farm, which has one of the country's largest corn mazes. This year, the theme is James Bond. I guess it would be on His Majesty's Secret Service now. We've just invalidated 60 years of James Bond's canon. So going to one of the largest corn mazes in the world to wander around, get some apple cider donuts, and just soak in all that fall and autumn vibe.
Man, the pumpkin spice is out, people. It is out.
So, Santosh, where's the nearest corn maze to you?
We like to go a little close to the valley. So we've got Tanaka Farms, which is in Irvine. There's Mr. Bones Pumpkin Patch, which is in Culver City. And ours that we go to most often is Underwood Family Farms out in Moore Park.
A good Halloween name, Underwood.
Yeah. Underwood, yeah. So they have a beautiful family farm and they have all kinds of activities year round. For instance, going out and strawberry picking during the summertime, but it completely Halloweenifies when you go out there for your October fest and you're able to go $22 and, you know, or $14 at the gate, free for kids who are two and younger. Lots of parking, and you can do the hayride and the corn maze and all the wonderful things. They've got amazing live music, Josh. And yeah, you can go take a pumpkin home with you. I would love for people to go out to Descanso Gardens right here in Glendale, California, and they have a beautiful event called Carved, C-A-R-V-E-D, where artists, Josh, absolute artists display the most beautiful jack-o'-lanterns you've ever seen. And nowadays, actually the last few years, they have live carving. So artists that are professional pumpkin carvers where you can actually stand and watch them make these masterpieces and light them up. It is an absolute delight to go to Carved at
the Bring your Garden. Spider webs in case they cut themselves.
Yeah, that's so.
And that's it for this week. As always, we love to hear your comments, questions, and feedback. This show is produced by me with a lot of help from Dr. Santosh and friends. Our theme music is composed by Rachel Leisure. If you heard ads this time and you would like to not hear them anymore, please donate and support us. We'll even throw in some bonus content for you behind the paywall. If you didn't hear ads, then I might have done this wrong, or you're helping to support us. Either way, thanks.
Really grateful. We're absolutely grateful.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Anyway, until next time, as always, get your shot, wear a mask, find somewhere spooky, plan out some fun activities, and until next time, as always, happy travels.
Bye, guys.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.